All right. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped that you're joining us. Feeling a little patriotic and a little feisty today. So we're going to tackle free speech. But every time we come into our podcast, our goal is to help you become the best version of yourself. And we have some fun doing that. We talk about some interesting things. But today we wanted to tackle something that we feel is of the utmost importance. If you want to be the best version of yourself and you want to grow, you need to be willing to hear some things you don't like. You need to be willing and feel free to express the things that are authentically on the inside of you. So let's tackle this concept of free speech with, let's just roll the grenade in the room, okay?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So do we actually have free speech in our country?
Like a really bastardized version of it, really.
Okay, that's fair enough. I mean, obviously, our founders thought it was important enough they made it in the First Amendment, along with the press and the ability to protest and petition the government and religion and everything else in that First Amendment. But that First Amendment is really about the ability to express yourself without having repercussions on your life, limb, your livelihood, any of that sort of stuff. But we live in a world where no matter what you say, no matter what you do, A, it's all recorded for the most part, put out on social media and everywhere else. And if someone doesn't like what you have to say, we have this really kind of trippy statements now. A number of people that spoke on college campuses, there would be signs where people would say, speech is violence, which is very interesting. And now, in light of the recent current events that have happened across our country, we are also seeing the hashtag silence is violence. And so that leads me to the conclusion, like, which is it? Like, if I say something, you know, I could be hurting somebody. If I don't say something, I'm hurting somebody. At what point do we come back to center on this and realize, like, it has gotten so ridiculous and outlandish? At what point do we come back and realize that I may disagree wholeheartedly, adamantly with you, Joe, but I would lay down my life for your right to say it? Like, when do we come back to that principle, that founding principle? Because right now, in our world, we do not have that exchange in large swaths of our country.
Yeah, and when it's your ox that gets gored is when you start caring. That's really what it comes down to. Because what happens is, you, if it's not affecting you, you keep drumming it up until you're like, oh, wait, hold on, wait a minute. What about not mine, right? And so you're right. It's getting absurd to the point where, you know, free speech is being pushed back into territories, like, instead of it being just open and free speech, things that you don't want to hear are deemed something that, you know, shouldn't be said.
Right. Like, you know, on you saw this, you know, over the last decade on college campuses, right? You had to have safe spaces. Certain speakers weren't allowed to come. You know, they had to get police to have security to allow certain people to speak on campuses because it was, quote unquote, hate speech. And the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, what twilight zone am I in? Like, right. The whole idea of college is to expose you to ideas. Some of them should be absolutely off the wall. Like, some of them should be wild and outside. That, like, you should be experimenting. You should be in the classroom engaging with all kinds of theories and ideas and trying to formulate and squish yourself into the worldview and cutting out this and looking at the evidence and to put up a wall and say, these ideas aren't allowed in, or we don't like this philosophy, goes against the whole educational model. Like, the whole idea that is from the Greek philosophers on, like, we're supposed to investigate. We're supposed to have stuff challenge our way of thinking. And we've really done a terrible job of allowing that.
But it was for the
culture.
Best intentions. There was no malice in the when you're like, okay, well, if you say something bad about a black guy, right, mm-hmm. and it hurts his feelings – and it insults him, and it makes him feel terrible. Like, you came up with that, let's not do that anymore, because we cared about the person who would get their feelings hurt terribly. But then it gets too far, right?
Right.
So, you know, but I think the most profound version of this is when you would see, like, a Klan rally, but you'd see a black police officer protecting the Klan rally from doing it. Like, that is the epitome of free speech. I'm sure if asked, he was not real thrilled about what was standing behind
him.
Right? But he was willing to do his job and put his life on the line to be able to protect what was going on behind him. But, and if we can get over it as individuals and do the same kind of thing, get over ourselves, and what we believe in is that everybody – no matter how stupid, now how incendiary, everybody has the right to say it.
Yeah, and I think that when you start getting into picking winners and losers, that's where everybody gets a little frustrated.
Oh, we have a, we have a call.
Ooh, fun.
Wait, oh, no, God, never
just
mind.
Just kidding. Well, if you want to call in,
yes,
our number is 330-595-1600. We'd love for you to call and join the conversation here on free speech. So I have a theory.
Yes.
That I think the founding fathers, when they wrote that First Amendment and they put in the right to free speech, they wrote it for the minority group that was going to be oppressed because they were in the minority, right? Britain ruled them, and Britain took their ability to print certain things and say certain things. And if they did, they could be chucked in prison without a trial. And so many of those things come out of that experience. And just over the last, I don't know, 60, 70 years, when you look at the 1960s, for instance, right? The 40s and 50s, the, you know, Leave It to Beaver, you know, all that sort of stuff, you know, it was very wholesome, very conservative, traditional family values. That was the culture. And then that gave birth to the 60s and 70s, and it was very anti-culture, anti-establishment, against the war in Vietnam. You had this undercurrent, and that liberal undercurrent was there, and they were big on free speech, right? You had George Carlin, the 7 dirty words you can't say on TV. They pressed the limits of those conservative values because they were in the minority. Well, now we have an instance where the vast majority of culture is run in liberal circles. And so now you have conservatives who before, you know, when they were in the majority wanted, you know, things like the FCC and various things. And some had very great motivations behind them, but they were there to curtail what you could say and couldn't say, what you had to rate something on TV. And I understand some of why they did some of those things. But at the end of the day, when you're in the majority like that, it's easy to say what is right and what isn't right.
Right.
And I really believe these amendments are there for when you're the only one standing. It's a God-given right, and the mob shouldn't be able to take it away.
Yeah, and I think the instability was built into the logic where, you know, every at one point you're going to always be in the minority, and that minority is going to shift, and there's going to be a new minority, and then there's going to be a different minority. It's gonna, it's supposed to oscillate between those two ends. It's not supposed to stay the same.
Mm.
It's only when we get to a certain point where you're happy and you're secure that you want to put a safety defense wall around it and make it not change from that point. And that's not the deal. That's not how it's supposed to work.
So some of the, you know, craziness that we see in our world is not healthy, and it can be on both sides of the political aisle. This idea of mob rule and cancel culture, and if I don't like what you have to say, I'm going to find out where you work, I'm going to find out where your family is. It's absolutely nuts. It's literally, like, by all means, like, you can't be that high strung. You just keep scrolling. It's this magical thing on social media.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really agree with that. Guess what? I don't have to write a dissertation back. You know, I can take that in. I can consider those opinions, and I can keep on moving.
That's right.
But everybody, like, there's this kind of mob sense to certain things where it almost feels like the Salem witch trials, right? You know, like, what else floats? Witches, you know? and we've gotten into this spot where people feel like, man, I'm screwed if I do this, and I'm screwed if I don't do this. What do I do? You know, if you're not familiar with the Salem witch trials, but, you know, basically someone had to be accused of being a witch, and if they put them in water, and if they sank and drowned, they weren't a witch, their soul was saved, they were still dead, but if they floated, they were obviously a witch, and then they burned him at the stake. So
that
either way, you were dead.
Totally
logical. But that is literally what is happening right now when it comes to stuff, whether you're talking about somebody that the right despises, like a Colin Kaepernick, or somebody on that the left despises right now, like Drew Brees and all the hot water that he's gotten into for saying he supports the flag. And both of those guys are entitled to their opinions. They're entitled to their Twitter accounts and whatever they want to say. But the idea that they would say those things and then their whole worlds would come crashing down because of 140 characters. It's totally unconscionable, and it goes against the fabric of our country, and it doesn't allow for the dialogue. How do we ever sit down and have a disagreement or have a conversation where we can be on polar opposites if the moment you say something I disagree with, I'm like, that's it, friendship's over. That's it.
Yep.
Unfriend, done, right. Blocked.
Well, that sounds like what's happening right now.
It is. It's totally unreal. I saw a really funny video. I forget who put it out, but it's the scene in Seinfeld where Kramer is walking in a rally for AIDS, and they want him to wear this red ribbon. And he's like, I don't want to wear the red ribbon. I'll walk in the thing, but I want to. And they're like, why wouldn't you wear the red ribbon? And everybody, like, surrounds him, and he gets beat up because he won't wear the red ribbon. And Seinfeld pokes fun at that. And that, obviously, an older sitcom. But to some extent, like, I watched it, I was like, wow, that is exactly what's going on.
Right.
Like, if you don't chant the mantra that we want you to chant right now, off with his head.
Right.
And it's a scary spot to be in, and I think crazy unhealthy.
Yeah, and I'm cheering on the rebels at this point, where the people who challenge the status quo is what changes it. You got to have people that stick it down and say, I'm not doing what you tell me to do. Screw you. I mean, I could think of a bunch of songs that could, you know, rally the next generation of, I don't want to follow those rules because they suck.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's something to be said for being a rebel when it matters, for standing up for things you believe in and so on and so forth. But we want to be... I think with when it comes to free speech, obviously there's some things you can't do. You know, you can't libel somebody or slander somebody. Like, there's certain laws in place. So there are and should be certain legal limitations, but those have to be proven in the court of law.
Right.
You're innocent until proven guilty. In the same way, you can't walk into a crowded movie theater and yell, you know, that there's going to be a bomb or something like that. You can't do that because it drives, you know, people could be injured. And I those things make sense to me. But the limitations that we want to put on speech and the words we want to redefine, and speech is so important because it's the only way, it's what makes us civilized, the fact that we can sit down and have a discourse and have a dialogue. Do you think in the political discourse, in the space where our country is, we will ever get back to a spot where a Democrat, a Republican, a Libertarian, a regular old independent American can sit down at the same table and not cancel each other? Like, right now, like, who wants to do that?
Right. Well, here's my take. I see this play out in other environments, and I call it the Britney Spears effect, right? In order to be relevant, Britney Spears had to keep reimagining her image and keep one-upping it, where it got a little bit worse in every worst way that you could possibly get, until she shaved her head and destroyed everything that was whatever, and then she returned to normalcy again.
Right, right.
I think it's going to take a culmination where nothing works and everything is terrible before we decide to say, yeah, let's disband it all and start back from the very basics.
So you're saying that there is going to be a further descent?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Okay.
For sure.
Prophesy to me. What is this descent going to look like? Because right now, I never imagined we'd be in the spot that we're at. Everything is so polarized.
Yeah.
You know, every organization, business, leader is trying to figure out, how do I navigate this and not hurt my customer base? How do I say the right things and not hurt people at my church? How do I navigate the issues? How do I say, you know, everybody's walking a tightrope on several issues, not just the you know, really prevalent stuff with George Floyd right now, but everybody's walking these tightropes trying to figure out, like, what world did I just wake up in?
Yeah, and I think that it's either going to happen. It's either going to happen super short or really stretched out. And it took something like coronavirus to upend our normal daily lives, to bring all this stuff to the surface, and now we just don't care. There's nothing to ruin. Like, I don't have a job, and there's nothing to do, and there's no money. Let's go take it out now, because what else we have to do? But if we get back to normalcy, you know, this might calm down a little bit, but it's still there. It's only going to take another unrest in order to bring it back to the surface, and then you got looting and rioting and people hating one another and total loss of being able to work together and communicate.
So what's the solution to get people to the table? Because ultimately, any peace talk, or it's really called a peace talk, you know, when you look at peace plans that have come through in the Middle East, when you look at getting two warring factions to sit down at the same table, what's it going to take to have that conversation right now?
Because somebody's going to have to take a segment of society and model how it works. And then when the rest of the society that doesn't believe that could work sees it and has evidence, they want to join it because it's a much better world to live in a city that's not on fire, right, than one that is.
Sure.
So and I think somebody's just going to have to prove it out and just break away and do a different thing. So like when we manage ourselves and we make a decision that benefits us but doesn't benefit another person, right? If the other person gets a little animus about us making a decision.
Sure.
So if we start swinging it the other way and making decisions that take those people into consideration before us, where we kind of lopsided it. And so like if Republicans start making laws and they say, one day we're not going to be in the majority. Let's make a law so that when we're on that side, we still approve this law. And when we take it through that spectrum, you like bring it way down and make it more palatable. Or if I'm sitting in across and we have a centimeter of disagreement versus a mile of disagreement, we have something to talk about.
Yeah. No, I think that's really good. I feel like the trust factor has been broken down. And the other thing when it comes to speech right now is we define words so differently. The semantics of stuff.
Drive me crazy.
People will say.
Can we do one real quick? Because I'm.
Yeah.
This is irking me.
Yeah.
Lie, right?
Okay.
Lie has taken on about 9,000 different things in the last year alone, right?
Yeah.
That I've noticed. If you say something that you thought to be true but ended up not being true later, that's somehow a lie now.
Okay.
Like, to me, a lie, the definition is that something I know is not to be true.
Intentional deception.
That I pretended like it was and presented it to you as if it were true. That is a lie.
Okay.
But it's taken on these forms where if somebody says something like, wow, this thing's going to kill me, right? And then later on, I was just being, you know, overdramatic and I didn't die. You're like, you lied, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't even mean that.
Yeah.
So thank you for letting me get that.
No, that's good. Eh? Do you have another word you'd like to talk about? Why don't you lie down on the couch? We can talk about this some more. it's true, though, especially in discussions with really important things, right? So you have words being tossed around in the media. You have words being tossed around in churches. And nobody really knows how to define some of these words, or you have one group that defines it one way and another group that defines it this way. And then you have people that say, well, this is the historical definition. This is how it plays out here. And all it does is muddy the waters and we can't even agree on the terms. So how do we ever have a conversation?
Yeah.
We can't
need principles that everybody buys into. We sort of have to have this national vote to say what these things mean. Right. And then we just decide to use these terms again because we've bastardized. We've changed the goalposts so many times on this. We don't even know what these things mean anymore.
Well, I think we did have a national vote. It was called the Declaration of Independence and then the Constitution.
But that was while ago. We need an update.
It was.
One.
We continued to add amendments and follow the processes laid in there. And I know some people think that that's not good enough, but that's the system that we have. And that's the avenue that we use to correct it is with our votes and with amendments and with all of that stuff as sometimes wild and weird as it is, that's the system that we have. And so I do think we have some of those principles, but I don't think everybody agrees on them.
Right.
And I think that's the my dad, when I was younger, my dad taught apologetics at church, and it was kind of like what makes us Christian and other people not Christian. And you would look at those, they believe these six things or they hold to this. But what I often found really interesting, depending on which cult or sect you were dealing with, they would use similar words that we use. They would just define them completely different.
Right.
You know, we would use words like, oh, we're saved or we're saved by grace or whatever. And they would use those same terminology, but mean something completely different. They would tweak a couple of things and it would make it mean something entirely different. So you'd be having a conversation with somebody in a different set, a different, you know, faith in you. And you think you're talking about the same thing, but you weren't. And I feel like right now we're talking past each other in a lot of these political discourses and stuff.
Well, and a lot of it's out of, you know, if somebody says something and they're a little bit wrong and it's not worth the hassle to be able to correct them and you let them say it, then it lets credibility that no one questioned them on it. And then that lasts a generation where because nobody put it, you know, and killed it right off the spot, then it lives on. And then you have a whole group of people that then believe something that should have been fought out and decided a long time ago.
Right. For instance, in the media right now, that's very frustrating to me is we keep convoluting three terms, right? We keep convoluting rioting, looting, and protesting. Protesting, nobody has a problem with. Rioting and looting, people have problems with. But when you convolute those three terms as if they're similar things or as if those people that are doing that are now doing this, it makes the discussion impossible to have because they'll say, well, no, you're saying that all, you know, protesters, no, that's not what I said. And then you get into this battle of semantics and one side makes one person look – and it works on both sides of the political aisle. This is not by any means only held on one spot. So,
and same thing with like illegal immigrant and immigrant means that in some people's eyes, it's the same thing.
Right. Yep. And so as we get into some of these semantics, that's where I think people start to get, and then the offense comes in and then we start building our walls and we start retreating to our camps. My concern is I think in our country, if we're not careful, we're going to go very tribal, for lack of a better term. We're going to go very into our corners with our small groups. And I don't like the binary political choice because I think most people don't like that choice. But truth be told, if we continue to break down the fabric of trust between people groups, people are naturally going to withdraw into their camps, if you will.
Yeah, and keep going further and further. And further. Stops.
Correct. Yep. And then it'll be, well, I don't agree with you. It's the same thing that happened at the Protestant Reformation. So, you had this guy, Martin Luther, who put up 95 things that he felt were wrong with the Catholic Church. He wasn't asking to start his own church. He was saying, hey, I think we need to fix these things. The Catholic Church said, you're now going to hell, kicked him out. And he said, I don't have a choice. And he had to, it's the short version. But then from that point on, then it split, and it split again, because then people said, well, I have problems with these five things, and you have problems with it. And now we have how many denominations in Protestant Christendom? A ton. But it all stemmed from, hey, I have an issue with this, I have an issue with that. And instead of hashing it out, we just said, well, I'll just start my own thing. And then the dividing lines.
I see that theme playing out in every dimension of our culture.
And it's the same thing when you start talking about the education system. Well, some people say, well, the public school system needs more money. And then other people say we need charter schools or we need options or we need whatever. And nobody wants to sit down and have that conversation. We score political points. We get our clips out there. And then whoever's in power tries to make the rules instead of coming together and having this conversation and going, what's the best way forward for education? You want the kids to be educated. I want the kids to be educated. We may come at this two different, but where do we cross over? And we could do that on a range of issues.
But you take the most unifying leader that there is. Picture him in your head, and you put him middle of where we're at right now.
Yeah.
If they're not good at – if they're good at getting people to come together, then – okay, so basically we're not at the level where that person would even be effective at this point. We need somebody to break down this so then we can – because no academic, no person with a skill set in unifying and being a leader is going to mess around with us when we can't put – two and two together at this point. So I think we need to grow up a little bit, and we need to build some responsibility into our culture first, and then we deserve a leader. Else we're going to get Donald Trumps, and we're going to get WWE fighters, and we're going to wonder why these really dumb people continue to represent us. It's because we're acting really dumb, and so that's what we're getting. That's a reflection of us.
Yeah, it's very interesting how we devolve into some of these things. But to me, I think it all comes back to this. If we tear down this First Amendment, none of the rest of them matter. And I feel like there's in both traditional, the educational system to the media to all across the board, everybody's kind of undercutting that First Amendment and pushing their own agenda. And if we would just come back to a spot where we realize it doesn't matter how crazy you might think Joe is or Doug is, man, they have every right to be able to do and say and be the person they want to be, and you do too. And we can kind of resolve that spot. That used to be a given, but I feel like now we have to have that as like a precursor to a conversation to get anything accomplished. Because without the First Amendment, what do you have?
Right. And you know what? Getting better, teaching people how to take stuff that they don't like to hear. And you have a couple choices, like we said in the beginning. You can either say nothing, right? You can argue it out. Right. Or, you can convince and try to get the change of mind. And if we have that ability to be able to talk without getting, like if someone, when someone's sitting in front of you and they insult you, how do you turn the other cheek and not respond to it? What's your strategy?
Me?
Yeah.
Personally?
If they're going for it, they're trying to get your goat, and they hit you with something.
I just grab the popcorn and sit back and watch.
Doesn't affect
you. That's
what
I do. Yeah. In the household I grew up in, my dad was pretty good at laying it on when he needed to lay on. So as a kid, I learned that defense mechanism of just, you can say whatever you need to say, but.
Don't draw you in. Yeah. Right?
Nope. I'm not going to take the bait, if that makes sense. I've been in plenty of contentious meetings. As a pastor, I've been in plenty of, I've been cussed out. I've been everything in between. And I find that when you feed that, and you turn around and give energy to it, it doesn't do anything. But if it just escalates. If I keep myself in a spot where you can say whatever you need to say, and you may believe those things, but I'm rooted enough in who I am and whose I know I am, I don't need to be.
And you don't need to get somebody fired, or you don't talk about in their back.
I would say 95% my brain space goes to empathize. They're obviously in this spot. They're obviously lashing out because something's not going right in their world, or they're obviously saying these things because and maybe there is something. I want to empathize. I want to go to that spot so that I can understand better where they're coming from. And that helps me understand that the pain isn't about me, or the name calling isn't about me. It's about them.
All right. That's interesting. I go introspective on everything. So if you say something to me, then I go inside and I'm thinking, they said something. Should I be seeing something? Is there something about me that I'm not seeing? And I try to figure things out.
I do that after the fact.
So it doesn't really hurt me, but it's just information. And I can decide to say, yeah, that's crap. Nope. I'm moving on from it.
Yeah, it's tough because we all love to live in our own echo chamber of praise. And so one of the things that I had been challenged, especially early on in ministry, you don't want to surround yourself with all yes people. And probably the same thing's true in business. You want some people that are going to push against the grain. You want some people that are going to challenge your initial thought or your preconceived. Otherwise, what do you need a team for?
That's exactly right.
And so I enjoy, respectfully, I don't want somebody that's going to undermine me or undercut me, but I enjoy having somebody on the team or in that space that's going to say, let me push. And they're going to go against it. And they're going to make me either question and come to a rational spot where I go, you know what? They have a point there. Maybe we need to do this differently. Or I'm going to actually feel more solidified in my own spot. And then when somebody else brings up that point, I'm going to have already thought through it and say, well, here's the three things I think about that.
Yeah. So, if we can get more people to do that, is to evaluate themselves and take information and make it constructive without getting all butthurt over stuff, then you'd have less arguing about it.
Yeah.
Because I'm literally some of the most radioactive topics I'm super interested in, to smart people trying to figure out and see what it is, but it'll never get to that point as long as we're hitting each other in the head with it.
Do you think, all right, I'll open this can of worms.
Yes.
Do you think we do a disservice to our children right now because we solve all of their problems because we don't want any strife? So, for instance, I have four kids. They fight all the time. It's pretty much a constant. And I'm not going to put on a referee's uniform all the time. And so there are times where, Graham will come in and be like, Ben, punch me. I'm like, why are you telling me? Go figure it out with him. And, I know some parents are like, oh, I have to correct that. And Sam and I, certainly, we get into that spot where, all right, let's just fix it. I'm tired of them screaming, whatever. Like, it wears on you. But one of the things that we've started to consciously do is like, you know what? Like, you need to sort that out. You didn't like that he took your book? You're talking to the wrong person. Go negotiate with your brother. Exactly. Or go figure it out with your sister. Because you have to learn to deal with people who aren't going to treat, who aren't going to treat you well. You're going to have to learn to deal with people that are going to take your stuff. You have to learn to deal with those people, and so you better start to do it with your siblings who love you and you're stuck with for the rest of your life.
Right.
And so it was one of the. It was actually my wife kind of made the observation. She's like, "We really need to just send them to like sort it out for themselves." And I'm like, "That's a good point."
Yeah, and then if they come back to you and ask you about strategies about how to do that, then that's a different conversation.
Yeah, but when you become the source to fix every problem, some parents like that because they got the Messiah complex and I'm going to fix this. But we're raising people that don't know how to have a disagreement and still realize like that other person doesn't hate me. It's why a lot of marriages don't work. Like if she doesn't agree with me all the time, like obviously this wasn't meant to be and we fell out of love. And I'm like, no, you just don't know how to navigate disagreement. You don't know how to have a conversation. And I think we're getting to a place in culture where we're raising people that don't know how to have healthy disagreements and honest disagreements. And so they avoid it, right? For growing up, remember, you don't talk about politics or religion at Thanksgiving because you don't want to have a fight. But I think that does us a disservice.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. Because you figure out how to like not be so upsetting. Like you kind of neutralize some of your speech so that you don't upset people. You know, going back in history, you know, some days, not all days, I think that maybe dueling was a way of saying that. Because you had to be super serious that you felt real super serious about something before you were willing to put your life on the line for the disagreement.
Or your honor was taken from you in some way. Sure.
Or even fighting, fist fighting. I mean, if you get punched in the face a couple times, then you'll figure how serious you are as well.
Yeah, that's true. Mike Tyson says everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
That's right.
It's true. I would say one other thing that is affecting free speech is social media and Twitter and all of this because we have the ability to pump out content like crazy, but we also have the ability to hide behind a keyboard. I call it internet strength, right? Like everybody can make a big comment, put a thing out there. They can share an article. And you've seen a ton of that, particularly these last several years. And it's just going to be more and more prevalent because it's an extension of who we are. But you don't actually have to be face-to-face with somebody. I don't have to buy you a coffee after we have the disagreement.
Right.
I can do it from 3,000 miles away and not know you and assume all your motivations, and I can write this really sophisticated thing, feel really good about myself, scored my points, and then I can go off somewhere and I don't have to deal with the repercussions of a relationship. And I think that side of things is a real, real dilemma for teaching people to navigate free speech and disagreement and dialogue. Do we need a class on this? Like
I think
in school?
So. Let's teach one.
We should.
Yeah.
We should do
a class.
And
you got Joe doesn't believe in time or this world anyway, so I'd be a great – I had to actually sit. There was a guy that I had a lot of respect for, and he's big in the business community, and he told me that he really doesn't like me. Like, he really doesn't like me. And I was forced to sit in a meeting with him where we had to get some stuff done at the same time where I knew this guy in here really doesn't like me. So I had to almost, like, take a version of myself and put him at the table where I wasn't going to be thinking the whole time, hey, this guy really hates me and feel all bad about it. Mm-hmm. I had to still get my job done in spite of knowing that guy very publicly said, I don't like you.
Yeah. it's part of being a CEO. It's part of being somebody who's in public. I'm sure as a pastor, there's probably a list of people over the years
that on some toes.
You step on some toes as part of, it's occupational hazard, and everybody assumes in the pastoral role anyway that you're perfect. Your family's perfect. Your kids are perfect and everything else. So the moment you show them that you're human,
it's too much pressure, man.
Well, and you take that off by not wearing a mask and by, you know, how many times do I say from the pulpit, do you hear me say, look, I put my pants on one leg at a time, just like everybody else in this room, because I want people to understand, yes, authentically, I'm called to this role, but I got to flesh this thing out
just like you.
You're
a human dude, right?
So, well, I think we could go on. I think we should do some sort of debate class or something with students. That would be fun just to get some kids in and teach them how to disagree with each other well.
Yeah. Well, there's other amendments and other principles that we can have whole shows about this. There's a Second Amendment we can get to. Let's do that one.
We should do that one. We'll really gain some followers and lose some followers.
It's all good. See, First Amendment.
First Amendment. There it is. I don't like them. Cancel. Well, we like you, so we're glad that you stuck with us for the show. We hope you enjoyed some of our banter on free speech. Genuinely go out, speak your mind, speak your thoughts. It is a God-given right, and nobody should be able to bully you into not saying something. So have a good day, and we'll see you next week.